evening. January 2020 is almost over already. Here at the Divided Kingdom radio program, produced by Elizabeth Cover Caverly and me, Lou Caverly, since October 2003. We can be heard on WWCR.com, KSTARTalkRadio.com, and LWRN.net. To hear our vital latest emergency broadcasts, visit our website to hear our archives at DividedKingdomRadio.com. Again, that's DividedKingdomRadio.com. Tonight is a big emergency broadcast. We're going to give you the earlier articles first, chronologically. The hardest hitting later, because the emergency coming is a very big one. Revenge of the 12 Monkeys. Nature Science Journal warned about pathogens escaping Wuhan Level 4 biosafety lab before the coronavirus outbreak. Infected monkeys bite scratch researchers. From Natural News, Mike Adams. There is a Level 4 biosafety laboratory in Wuhan, China, where microbiologists study and develop genetically engineered biological weapons. And in 2017, the science journal Nature warned the world about, quote, pathogens escaping, unquote, and infecting the world. It now appears that scenario has unfolded exactly as feared. Quote, some scientists out China worry about, some scientists outside China worry about pathogens escaping and the addition of a biological dimension to geopolitical tensions between China and other nations, unquote. That was the warning in Nature in a February 2017 article. It went on to say, quote, but Chinese microbiologists are celebrating their entrance to the elite cadre, empowered to wrestle with the world's greatest biological threats, unquote. The communist Chinese government, known for bullying the world while lying about its own genetic engineering weapons experiments on humans, claimed its BSL-4, that's Biosafety Lab Level 4, laboratories would, quote, benefit the world, unquote. Reports Nature, quote, the lab was certified as meeting the standards and criteria of BSL-4 by the China National Accreditation Service for Conformity Assessment, CNAS, in January. Reports Nature, which means, of course, that the lab has no safety standards whatsoever, and the entire accreditation is a fraud. We know this because many accreditations in China are fraudulent, even across the food and supplements industry and quote-unquote organics, where organic foods from China are routinely found to be contaminated with pesticides and heavy metals, as confirmed in our own mass spec laboratory in Texas. That would be from Natural News. Nature explains, quote, BSL-4 is the highest level of biocontainment. Its criteria include filtering air and treating water and waste before they leave the laboratory, and stipulating that researchers change clothes and shower before and after using lab facilities. You can be sure, and that was the end of the quote, you can be sure these procedures are not being followed, as the very culture of communist China is one of cutting corners, deceiving regulators, and cheating on every possible way. There is a zero probability that China's BSL-4 biohazard facilities are fully compliant with safety regulations. The seafood market is a cover story. The Wuhan National Biosafety Lab is located about 20 miles away from the Hunan seafood market, reports the UK Daily Mail, which also publishes this map showing the geographic proximity of the two. And you can get the map if you go to the Natural News website. Elizabeth?
Yes, I'm looking at that very map with the Hunan seafood market, and then a little bit 20 miles south of it, I believe, is the Wuhan Institute of Virology. The UK Daily Mail also writes, and again, this is Mike Adams, that a SARS virus, quote, escaped in a leak from another Chinese lab in 2004. Chinese officials worked to improve safety, but also to expand the country's capacity to continue to study the very virus its lab had let out. Did you catch that? the lab allowed SARS to escape so they could study its pandemic effects on the population at large. In these Chinese labs, scientists there are intentionally infecting monkeys with the coronavirus to see what happens. As the UK Daily Mail writes, this is a very dangerous endeavor since monkeys often attack researchers, which is understandable considering they are being murdered by the unethical scientists there. Studying the behavior of a virus like 209nCoV and developing treatments or vaccines for it requires infecting these research monkeys, an important step before human testing. Monkeys are unpredictable, though, warned Ebright. They can run, they can scratch, they can bite, he said, and the viruses they carry would go where their feet, nails, and teeth do. These Chinese labs have a history of allowing deadly pathogens to escape. In fact, as Nature, and again that's that publication, explains, the very culture of secrecy and obedience that characterizes China is a, quote, perfect storm for cover-ups and biohazard. That word is accidents. That's from Nature. Worries. Other worries surround the Chinese lab, too. The SARS virus has escaped from high-level containment facilities in Beijing multiple times, notes Richard Ebright, a molecular biologist at Rutgers University in Piscataway, New Jersey. Tim Treven, founder of Chrome Biosafety and Biosecurity Consulting in Damascus, Maryland, says that an open culture is important to keeping BSL-4 labs safe, and he questions how easy this will be in China, where society emphasizes hierarchy. Also contained in a Nature warning is a note about how scientists are concerned China is using these labs to develop bioweapons. Ebright is not convinced of the need for more than one BSL-4 lab in mainland China. He suspects that the expansion there is a reaction to the networks in the United States and Europe, which he says are also unwarranted. He adds that governments will assume that such excess capacity is for the potential development of bioweapons. These facilities are inherently dual use, he says. The prospect of ramping up opportunities to inject monkeys with pathogens also worries rather than excites him. They can run, they can scratch, they can bite. China tried to develop a bioweapon to target human beings, and it just bit them in the you-know-what. The bottom line, China tried to develop a highly infectious, extremely dangerous bioweapon that could be used to attack the United States, most likely. Now, I want to interject there. If it came to attack the United States, we have to know that these conditions are just prime, ready. And fear from Fox News, San Francisco's poor street conditions, a factor in city's loss of $64 million Oracle Tech Conference. And this, again, was published really back in December 11, 2019. Oracle, a major Silicon Valley tech company, will move its annual Open World Conference to Las Vegas next year due to San Francisco's expensive hotel rates and the city's, quote, poor street conditions, according to reports. The loss of Open World, which has been held in San Francisco for about 20 years, is raising new concerns about whether the city's struggles with homelessness, open drug use, and street violence may be scaring off tourism and other business. The San Francisco Chronicle reported, for the industry, for the city to have a major conference leave us impacts us all. Kevin Carroll, chief executive of the Hotel Council of San Francisco, which represents hotel owners, told the newspaper. Former San Francisco mayoral candidate, years of liberal policies have caused homelessness tragedy. That's a headline. It's a huge deal, added Rick Swig, a hotel consultant at RSBA and Associates. Oracle decided to pull out, even though San Francisco recently invested $551 million in a renovation and expansion of the downtown Moscone Center, the convention facility where Open World had been held for years, the Chronicle reported. The loss of the conference is expected to cost the city an estimated $64 million in annual economic activity, the San Francisco Travel Association said in an email obtained by CNBC. Open World brought about 60,000 people to the conference each year, the Chronicle reported. But many attendees had complained about the city's hotel rates and, quote, poor street conditions, the SFTA email said, according to CNBC. And we keep saying this almost like a euphemism, poor street conditions. Many news outlets that are telling the truth are exposing what these blue cities are like. And now this article tells you a little bit more about it. And, of course, Oracle did move its event to Las Vegas on a three-year contract, and it'll be at Caesars Forum, a convention facility scheduled to open in 2020 on this Strip. And San Francisco, it says in this article, and other cities in California have been criticized by President Trump and the other Republicans as examples of dysfunction that they argue has been caused by the Golden State's Democratic-controlled governments to state and local levels. On Monday, and remember, this article was December 11th, 2019. On Monday, a transient convicted of a fatal shooting at a homeless camp in Sacramento was sentenced to 118 years in prison. Last week, a neighborhood group in San Francisco kicked off a privately funded program to increase power washing of human and animal feces from local sidewalks. Now, just picture what we've been telling you about China. And Tucker Carlson on Fox News was reporting on several cases of Chinese spies. One of them was a professor at Harvard. So you see, people have been inserted here perhaps for nefarious reasons to get information, to get things back to China. So we can't trust the political scene in our interaction with this communist country. And we cannot trust what's going to come here. We cannot trust our own mayors. Remember, the mayor of San Francisco is a child of the Weatherman. Boudin is his name, and I believe one of his parents is still in jail. The Weatherman, who back in the 70s wanted to burn down all the buildings. They want anarchy. They want what Bernie Sanders on steroids, will deliver. It'll be like a Stalin gulag system when we're done with all this. And we just really can't tolerate seeing our beautiful America turned into these blue sanctuary cities. Again, remember, a neighborhood group kicked off this privately funded program to increase power washing of human and animal feces from local sidewalks. Lou, when you get to power washing, you know, our whole home was covered with mold, mostly from the chemtrails. Al Cuppet pointed it out that if you see roofs with the dark streaks on them, that's the chemtrails. You remember how hard it was to get all that off the house.
Oh, yes, that was quite a job.
Now, in other words, this isn't just one or two people, excuse the term, pooping a little bit. This required power washing. There's a terrifically big accumulation of all this stuff, wouldn't you say?
Oh, I'd have to say that. Apparently, not even an ordinary fire engine hose will do the job.
No, and in Oakland, residents were placing massive logs. We reported that around the city in a bid to discourage transients from setting up a camp. Now, we're just telling you that we're now very susceptible in these big cities to this coronavirus. And if China has let it loose, or we have some other suppositions too. We've got to hear everything tonight. So at any rate, in this article that I was reading, that China had tried to develop the bioweapon, the bottom line, China tried, and this is Mike Adams again, naturalnews.com. The bottom line, China tried to develop a highly infectious, extremely dangerous bioweapon that could be used to attack the United States, most likely. But their sloppy lab procedures resulted in a virus escaping their own BSL-4 facilities and infecting local populations. This is now the most likely scenario that's emerging. An engineered bioweapon, but an accidental release in a domestic lab. That's what happens when you play with fire. Sometimes you get burned. All right, let's pick up the next part.
All right. And we have coronavirus perfect storm now exists thanks to biosludge, open borders, filthy liberal cities. January 24th, 2020, Mike Adams. The horrendously bad decisions of human beings who hold power in government, media, and industry have brought the human race to a perfect storm of conditions that will strongly contribute to the spread and fatalities of the coronavirus pandemic now threatening the world. As I relate in an emergency podcast, and if you go to Natural News, you can listen to that, the following conditions are now converging into a worst-case scenario when trying to stop a pandemic. our best case scenario for the globalists trying to achieve depopulation. Number one, open border policies that allow infected people to walk right across the border into the United States with no health screening whatsoever. Number two, sanctuary city policies that protect infected illegals from being discovered or deported. And Elizabeth has just given us some information on that very thing.
And also, we were wondering, we heard on, I believe, Tucker Carlson, the question, why wasn't Trump and his whole administration stopping the flights from China? Now, I think you heard some updates on that, did you not, today?
Yes, the personnel, I think at the I think it might have been around 120 people in the, not the embassy, but the kind of a government base at a smaller city. Can't think of the correct word off the top of my head. Anyway, they were ordered to come back to the USA for safety reasons to try and escape this epidemic.
Those would be Americans, in other words,
they
being
would.
Brought back from China.
Yes, and they have landed in California and been
and they were in the
over.
Wuhan area, did you not say?
They were, yes. They were at the, I don't know if you call it the consular section. It's not a full-fledged embassy, but it's a government government representatives in the city. So they were checked over, and the they get a clean bill of health for the time being. But
we know that this thing doesn't give symptoms ahead of time very much.
Yes.
Now, what about the Chinese then? I think we heard some private carriers in the U.S. were going to stop flights, but has there been anything official to stop the travel?
Well, I know that some of the cities have been quarantined by the Chinese themselves. That is the Chinese.
I mean,
people.
From China to here, to U.S.
That's the only thing I have heard so far. But I think you're quite right that some private airlines have said that, you know, they're stopping all flights out of that area.
It certainly needs to be done. I think that I heard Senator John Kennedy, or is he a representative? Whichever he is from the South, I think he was going to be talking to the president about this, that this needed to be done. Well, continue there, how we're so vulnerable.
Yes, number three in Mike's list is the widespread practice. These are the things that are going to contribute to, or could easily contribute to, the spread of this epidemic and what may become a pandemic. Number three is the widespread practice of biosludge distribution onto food crops. Biosludge is the raw human sewage sludge that's collected by every city in America, slightly dried to reduce water mass, then loaded onto trucks and dumped onto nearby farm fields. It's sold to farmers as free fertilizer because it's rich in nitrogen. It also means that any coronavirus which makes its way into the sewage system will be distributed by U.S. cities onto farm fields, obviously contaminating food crops and multiplying the effects of the pandemic. And it says you can see a full documentary at biosludged.com to learn about that. So if you go to Natural News, of course, you can make that connection. And number four, those now legal practice in Washington State of, and get this, now this is a shock to me, and I don't easily shock. It says, an illegal practice in Washington State of liquefying dead human bodies and flushing them into the municipal sewage system, where they become biosludge to be spread on crops.
It really is getting like Soylent Green.
Oh, yes.
This is really hideous. We're turning into carnivores spiritually and now physically.
Yeah.
With Governor Northam and the baby situation, this is getting to be almost like Britain heating its hospitals with the aborted babies, burning them. Moloch is returning. We'll have about that at a later time. I'll just refer to it quickly. The Colosseum, and it is run by the Vatican there in Italy. It now has a big thing in the front of it, a Moloch statue. How about that?
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, but go ahead.
This practice that is what we just said about the dead bodies was just recently legalized in Washington State, and it means the dead will be used to fertilize the food crops that are fed to the living.
And Seattle is one of those cities, Portland, Seattle, Los Angeles, San Francisco, that has deteriorated into these feces and the needles, everything else, the disease.
Yep.
So that'll be affected.
And when people start dying from coronavirus, again, I'm reading from Mike's work, when they start dying from coronavirus, will they also be flushed into the sewage systems? Number five, the practice now common in filthy liberal cities of allowing people to openly defecate in the streets with no repercussions or arrests. Since viruses often infect human feces and other body excretions, this likely means the coronavirus will be found in the raw human feces that get washed into storm drains during rainstorms. The storm drains in San Francisco, Seattle, and other coastal cities emptied directly into the ocean, where viruses are then washed under the beaches of North America, infecting beachgoers and mixing with aquatic ecosystems to produce even more potentially dangerous variants of infectious disease. Number six, the continued attacks on natural medicine and the censorship of sources like Natural News that can teach people how to avoid or overcome infections even when pharmaceutical medicines fail or are completely out of supply. Number seven, the compromised human immune system due to widespread vaccination practices that actually weaken, not strengthen, the veracity of the human immune response. People who routinely receive vaccinations, such as flu shots, are discovered to be more vulnerable to future infections. Widespread immunization practices across North America, Europe, Australia, and other countries have created a highly vulnerable population that can be easily infected with coronavirus.
And we have to interject that this brainwashing sometimes is really obnoxious. There's a local grocery store that offers all kinds of extra gas points if you go get your flu shot. And there's another grocery that has a sign hanging way out in front of their store to get people in. It's really, really something.
Yes, it is. Mike goes on to say these factors now converge, that is, all these things he's listed, to create a perfect storm for the coronavirus outbreak, which is actually a weaponized, engineered biological weapon being unleashed against humanity in order to achieve depopulation. It will very likely succeed, since humanity has been begging for self-destruction through all the practices detailed above. Most notably, the highest fatalities from any such pandemic will occur in cities, especially cities where the homeless are more populous and filthy, unsanitary conditions exist. In other words, liberal cities. And Mike says you can listen to his urgent podcast for more details. Just go to naturalnews.com.
And yes, if this does become a global pandemic, the rural areas will eventually will be spared. They possibly won't be. And I'd like to interject at this moment with a little excerpt from my book, Patriots Warning 1, America Attacked. And this concerns my mother. And the first part is that she was looking at a wonderful picture of my brother and me sitting on my dad's tractor. When she looked at the eloquent picture of her children on the Cub, that was the nickname my dad had for the tractor, sometimes Margaret longed to travel backward through time to the small, vivacious girl wearing ribbons in the homemade dress Margaret had sewn, and to her precious baby boy. And that was my brother and me. It was hard for her to imagine she had been alive so long and experienced so much. And she is the one who, at age 90 or so, reported in on the Flight 93 Miracle Bible. When we get farther into the summer, a little closer to September 11th, we'll probably tell you about that again, but here's the part you want to hear. Margaret had been an eyewitness to the great global scourge, the flu epidemic of 1918. She could always enthrall her little boy and girl when she told of an incident she remembered from when she was only 7. Margaret saw a large farm sled on runners being pulled by 2 white horses through deep snow. On it was 1 coffin for the flu victim mother and her newborn baby. The dead woman was a neighbor who had tailored clothes for Margaret and her brothers and sisters. Amazingly, the elderly woman, that was my mother, could also remember when she was only 2 years old being lifted up to look down into the coffin at Aunt Bertha. Her maternal aunt had hair that was longer than Bertha was. And now Lou is going to give us a little snapshot from the past, a little kind of perhaps a fable of warning.
From History.com, dated February the 22nd, 2019, originally published October 12th, 2020. 2010. And just 102 years ago, this was all taking place. The Spanish flu pandemic of 1918, the deadliest in history, infected an estimated 500 million people worldwide, about one-third of the planet's population, and killed an estimated 20 million to 50 million victims, including some 675,000 Americans. The 1918 flu was first observed in Europe, the United States, and parts of Asia before swiftly spreading around the world. At the time, there were no effective drugs or vaccines to treat this killer flu strain. Citizens were ordered to wear masks, schools, theaters, and businesses were shuttered, and bodies piled up in makeshift morgues before the virus ended its deadly global scourge. The first wave of the 1918 pandemic occurred in the spring and was generally mild, and here we're talking about 1918. The sick who experienced such typical flu symptoms as chills, fever, and fatigue usually recovered after several days, and the number of reported deaths was low. However, a second highly contagious wave of influenza appeared with a vengeance in the fall of that same year. Victims died within hours or days of developing symptoms, their skin turning blue and their lungs filling with fluid that caused them to suffocate. In just 1 year, 1918, the average life expectancy in America plummeted by a dozen years. And I should add, interject here, my own uncle. It's hard to believe I would have had an uncle old enough to have died in this epidemic, but my uncle Milton, according to my dad many years later, and looking back, said that he was a telegraph operator, still a very young man, the son of one of my dad's oldest brothers, and there was quite a gap in years. He was in a little town called Raymond, New Hampshire. He fell ill with this very flu. They somehow contacted my grandmother, his mother, and by the time she could get up to New Hampshire to visit him, he was already dead. So that's a first-hand, you might say, acknowledgement of what this is all talking about.
Yes, and Lou isn't that elderly, but you see, he was a surprise to his parents. They never thought they could have children, so his mother was almost 40 when he was born. And the same with me in the cup-up line. There was a long hiatus there between my grandmother's first children and my father, at least 20 years or so, so that I can say that my grandfather was born before the Civil War. And that seems amazing. I think it was 1859 he was born. So this gives us a kind of a long heritage, I think, in history, in which we have better connections with people who were in the past and who lived an entirely different life, spiritually and physically. I haven't learned everything that my mother could do and my grandmother, but at least I am a very good cook. But my brother actually mastered the canning and a lot of the things, and of course he learned quite a bit from his own heritage. He could be very self-sustaining on a farm if he had to, and as a hunter and so forth. So we're just saying how long ago this was, and actually, did you complete that article, Lou?
No, there's quite a bit more here. I'll continue then. It's unknown exactly where the particular strain of influenza that caused the pandemic came from. However, the 1918 flu was first observed in Europe, America, and areas of Asia before spreading to almost every other part of the planet.
And I think I'll interrupt you
sure.
to go to The Guardian now.
All right.
There's a longer article, and I'm not sure we can give all of it, but this was upon the anniversary date in 2018. You see, it was by Mark Honigsbaum. 100 years ago this month, just as the First World War was drawing to a fitful close, an influenza virus unlike any before or since swept across the British Isles, felling soldiers and civilians alike. One of the first casualties was the British Prime Minister and war leader, David Lloyd George. On September 11, 1918, Lloyd George, riding high on news of recent Allied successes, arrived in Manchester to be presented with the keys to the city. Female munitions workers and soldiers home on furlough cheered his passage from Piccadilly train station to Albert Square. But later that evening, he developed a sore throat and fever and collapsed. He spent the next 10 days confined to a sickbed in Manchester Town Hall, too ill to move and with a respirator to aid his breathing. Newspapers, including the Manchester Guardian, underplayed the severity of his condition for fear of presenting the Germans with a propaganda coup. But according to his valet, it had been touch and go. Lloyd George, then age 55, survived, but others were not so lucky. The Spanish influenza, so-called because neutral Spain was one of the few countries in 1918 where correspondents were free to report on the outbreak, claimed the lives of nearly 250,000 Britons. Cruelly, for a nation that had seen the flower of British male youth mown down by German guns, the majority were adults, aged 20 to 40. The mortality was the inverse of most flu seasons, when deaths fall most heavily on the elderly and the under-fives. The global death toll was inconceivable. According to the most recent estimates, between 50 million and 100 million people worldwide perished in the three pandemic waves between the spring of 1918 and the winter of 1919. Adjusting for population growth, that is equivalent to between 200 million and 425 million today. And they go on to say in this article that, unlike today, there was no early warning system. And they talk about that as in other 20th century epidemics and pandemics, such as HIV/AIDS, Africans and Asians suffered proportionally more than Europeans and North Americans, and that the severity of this pandemic and the peculiar death pattern puzzle scientists to this day. And then they get into all this speculation where it began and so forth and so on. And then I said to Lou, I had remembered something. When I was writing my book, Patriots Warning, America Attacked, and the second book, Chaos and Chemtrails, Patriots Warning 2, that we were highly suspicious of a scientific group that was going up far up into Alaska to dig up old remains of people who had had the Spanish flu. And we wondered, why would they bother doing that? Now, sometimes things we think happen by the deep scientific state at NIH, things that you wouldn't want to know about, things maybe at Fort Detrick, the bioweapons facility there. There's always a hidden agenda against the American people. We know there were experiments done on people back in the 1950s. All kinds of things have gone on. The Tuskegee men. So Lou said, when I brought this up, he said, you know, I think I got an article today that discussed that very thing. And so here we have this in this article where Mark Honigsbaum says that he traveled to Washington, D.C. to interview one of the world's leading experts on this 1918 pandemic, Jeffrey Taubenberger. A molecular pathologist at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases has been studying the Spanish flu for more than 30 years. In the late 1990s, he succeeded in retrieving fragments of viral RNA from stored pathology specimens taken from American soldiers who had died of flu at U.S. Army camps in 1918, and an Inuit woman, and of course that would be an Eskimo, who had been buried on a beach in Alaska where the permafrost had preserved her lung tissue from decay. There it is, you see. Now, using modern molecular techniques, Taubenberger and his colleague, Ann Reed, amplified the fragments and in 2005 published the virus's genetic sequence. Now, again, we would have to wonder, what benefit to humanity is this to reconstruct that virus's genetic sequence? Their findings were a shock, the article says. Previously, epidemiologists had observed that flu pandemics were preceded or followed by outbreaks of influenza-like illnesses in dogs, cats, and horses. It was also known that from time to time, flu viruses could infect pigs and, of course, humans, and that wild flu viruses circulated in migratory waterfalls. However, when Taubenberger analyzed the genome of the Spanish flu, he found that most of its genes were derived from a bird flu virus. Indeed, Taubenberger considered the H1N1 virus so avian-like, he could not discount the possibility that it had transmitted directly from birds to humans shortly before 1918 and perhaps as early as 1916. And, you know, as we look at the rest of the article, we had actually even this writer said it also begged the question, why bring the Spanish flu back to life? And what if the virus escaped the laboratory? and fell into the hands of terrorists. To prevent that from happening, Taubenberger and other scientists with access to the freezer containing the virus are screened by the FBI and must wear double gloves, a respirator, and a full body suit, like the ones worn by medical workers during the West African Ebola epidemic. They must also submit to an iris scan. It's really the equivalent to top secret clearance, he says. Does that comfort you, listeners of the Divided Kingdom? Do you feel at ease? Oh, good. Oh, yeah, nothing could ever happen. Now, they get into how did this originate and where did it originate. And in the turmoil of our lives, Lou and me, when we thought we would have to move to Pennsylvania in 2012, an important article, got lost or is somewhere where we could never find it today. But it was very revolutionary in what it claimed. It claimed, now, first of all, you have to think about when did vaccination sort of start. The pioneer was Edward Jenner, and that was smallpox. And, you know, he just took something out of, was it the sheep, Lou, I think?
Cows,
and he kind of injected it into people. So there were some things going on. And we already know that the modern precedents, MI6 and the CIA and all of these groups, they had forerunners, shall we say. Cecil Rhodes and his round table group, there were always people who were doing sinister things. And I just bring that up to let you hear the possibility that maybe, just maybe, some people were sinister and advanced enough, the Mengeles of their time, possibly at Fort Riley, Kansas. And this is where it began. Because it did seem to spread from the soldiers. One theory is that the spillover, this is this article again, occurred in 1918 not far from an army camp in Kansas that supplied soldiers to the American Expeditionary Force. There were explosive outbreaks of an influenza-like illness at Camp Funston, Fort Riley, in March 1918, followed by similar outbreaks along the eastern seaboard of the U.S. and on the transatlantic troop carriers that ferried American troops to France. So, you know, we could go on and on in that article, but I don't think we have enough time to do that. But I just leave you with the question, has this kind of a culling of the population, has it begun a little earlier than we thought with some of these experiments? And now we're going to move on till we get to the hardest hitting articles of all.
Next, we have an article, Do the Math, Wuhan region urgently adding 100,000 hospital beds, as the official Chinese government claims outbreak only affecting 4,000 people. This was January 27, 2020. Mike Adams. As the Epoch Times is now reporting, China's Hubei province, which encompasses the Wuhan region, known as Ground Zero for the coronavirus outbreak, is urgently adding 100,000 hospital beds, even as the official infection numbers for the Chinese government are barely above 2,900. Says the Epoch Times, quote, the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak, China's Hubei province, is opening up 100,000 hospital beds in an effort to contain the disease, the province's vice governor announced on January 27th, unquote. This is on the same day that China's official numbers leaped from 2,901 infected to 4,239 infected, an increase in 46% in just one day. The Chinese government's official numbers cannot be reconciled with the announcement that 100,000 hospital beds are being urgently added to the regional health care infrastructure. If only 3,000 to 4,000 people are infected, why build 100,000 additional hospital beds and lock down 17 cities? The Epoch Times reports, quote, another 24 medical centers will be mobilized to assist with patients who exhibit symptoms and are suspected to have the virus, unquote. And it also mentions that infections have now been reported in every Chinese province except Tibet. Also mentioned in the article is the fact that hospitals in Hubei province are currently consuming 100,000 protective suits each day, which means at least 100,000 healthcare workers are active on the scene. Why would China need 100,000 healthcare workers to take care of just 3,000 or 4,000 infected patients? The numbers don't add up. And Mike Adams has a very good chart on the third page of this article. If you go, once again, to Natural News, you can check that out.
And what date was your article, Lou?
This was dated on the 27th, which would have been Monday.
Now, we're moving up to Tuesday, January 28th. Again, this is Mike Adams. Headline, Coronavirus Cover-Up Begins. China threatens social media users with 7 years in prison for reporting pandemic news that doesn't parrot official stories. With coronavirus infections having leapt nearly 30% in one day in mainland China, U.S. health officials are rolling out a parade of lies about the risks the United States might face. The number of fatalities attributed to coronavirus have already surpassed those of SARS, and the number of infections and deaths is increasing at an exponential parabolic rate. Is that right?
Hey, parabolic.
Parabolic, yep. Right. Hundreds of commercial air flights from China continue each day, delivering potentially infected Chinese citizens to large cities around the world, including New York, London, Miami, Los Angeles, and Toronto. The transmissivity of the virus is so high that every one person who carries it, even when they show no symptoms, can transmit the virus to two or three other people. This results in an exponential growth rate that quickly cascades out of control. According to a study published in The Lancet, this coronavirus strain has a 15% fatality rate and an 83% infection rate for those exposed. Woo! The roughly 8-day incubation period is characterized by high contagiousness combined with a bizarre lack of fever symptoms in some carriers, further contributing to the spread of the virus by allowing stealth carriers to bypass airport screening. So we really wonder about those Americans who've been brought home from that consulate or whatever, don't we? China is burning through 100,000 full-body health hazard suits each day, providing a strong hint about the real scale of this pandemic, despite the official figures released by the communist Chinese government. That government, by the way, has gone out of its way to artificially limit the supply of diagnostic kits in order to suppress the number of people confirmed to be carrying the virus. And then Mike has a chart that shows the spread of this virus, but we will move on from that. Now the government of China has issued harsh warnings to silence social media postings from users who are trying to survive the quarantined cities, which now encompass over 56 million mainland Chinese. As the Epoch Times reported early today, the outbreak of Wuhan coronavirus has made many mainland Chinese realize that the Chinese Communist Party and its media mouthpieces do not tell the truth or tell the whole story. Social media users in Wuhan, especially doctors and nurses, share their experiences and post videos on social media to alert everyone to the true situation, which the authorities find embarrassing. Individuals who dare to report the truth about the lack of supplies or the true numbers of coronavirus infections are accused of, quote, spreading rumors, a tactic that smacks of big tech censorship in the United States. So, in other words, to sum up what Mike is saying, prison sentences for anyone who questions the official lies. And he says, excuse me, how China mirrors Google. And we know a lot of things are similar there. A leaked document from Cyberspace Administration of China also stated that starting on the 26th of January, all social media groups are forbidden to publish any news about Wuhan pneumonia that are not from official sources. And he says that Chinese citizens who have run out of food, medicine, and fuel in quarantine areas are ordered to imagine they are living bountiful lives with an abundance of everything they need. For to contradict the Communist Party's official stories is to risk ending up in an organ harvesting prison, which also may not be mentioned without fear of being sentenced to death. And he says if people really aren't dying, then why does the government have to threaten people with prison time to try to shut them up? If the coronavirus is under control, why are only official news sources allowed to be quoted? The coronavirus is far, far worse than what any official source is reporting. And he says the best guess is that there's a minimum of 100,000 infections in China and at least 500 in the USA right now. The CDC's current claim that it is observing somewhere around 110 individuals in America holds about as much credibility as China, saying only 130 people have died so far. And he says to each of you, stay informed. Don't trust lying governments or lying media. We are the real news, and we will tell you the real truth that may just help save your life if this pandemic spins out of control.
And this real news continues on Wednesday, January 29th, 2020. The headline reads, is coronavirus a manufactured bioweapon that Chinese spies stole from Canada? This is by Ethan Hoff, Natural News. In 2019, a mysterious shipment sent from Canada to China was found to contain hidden coronavirus, which Chinese agents working at a Canadian laboratory reportedly stole, obviously without permission. Reports revealed that these Chinese agents were working undercover for the Chinese biological warfare program and may have infiltrated North America for the sole purpose of hijacking this deadly virus in order to unleash it at a later date. That unleashing could be the coronavirus outbreak that's currently dominating media headlines, with as many as 44,000 people now infected, despite blame being assigned to contaminated food sold at the Honan Seafood Market in Wuhan, China. And here's why. It was back on June 13, 2012, when a 60-year-old man from Saudi Arabia was admitted to a private hospital in Jeddah with a 7-day affliction of fever, cough, expectoration, and shortness of breath. The man had no known history of cardiopulmonary or renal disease, was on no medications, and didn't smoke, and tests revealed that he had become infected with a previously unknown strain of coronavirus. However, tests could not reveal where the man had contracted the coronavirus. So Dr. Ali Mohammed Zaki, the Egyptian virologist who was caring for the man, contacted Ron Pouchier, a premier virologist at the Erasmus Medical Center in Rotterdam, the Netherlands, for advice. Pouchier proceeded to sequence a sample of the virus sent to him by Dr. Zaki using a broad-spectrum pan-coronavirus real-time polymerase chain reaction method to distinguish it from other strains of coronavirus. He then sent it to Dr. Frank Plummer, the scientific director of Canada's National Microbiology Laboratory, NML, in Winnipeg, on May 4, 2013, where it was replicated for assessment and diagnostic purposes. Scientists in Winnipeg proceeded to test the strain of coronavirus in animals to see which species could catch it. This research was done in conjunction with the Canadian Food Inspection Agency's National Lab, as well as the National Center for Foreign Animal Diseases. NML, it's important to note, has long conducted tests with coronavirus. This lab had also identified another type of coronavirus known as NL63 back in 2004. Fast forward to today, and the recent discovery of the mystery shipment containing coronavirus can be traced all the way back to these samples that were sent to Canada for analysis, suggesting that the current coronavirus outbreak was likely stolen as a bioweapon to be released for just such a time as this. According to reports, the shipment occurred back in March 2019, which caused a major scandal with biowarfare experts who questioned why Canada was purportedly sending lethal viruses to China. It was later discovered in July that Chinese virologists had stolen it and were forcibly dispatched as a result. And it explains a report by Great Game India, as republished by Zero Hedge, quote, the NML is Canada's only Level 4 facility and one of only a few in North America equipped to handle the world's deadliest diseases, including Ebola, SARS, coronavirus, etc., unquote. And it goes on to add, the NML scientist who was escorted out of the Canadian lab, along with her husband, another biologist, and members of her research team, is believed to be a Chinese bioweapon agent. And the name is Xianguo Cui. It goes on to explain, adding that Cui had served as head of the vaccine development and antiviral therapy section of the special pathogens program at Canada's NML. Formerly respected scientists in China, Cui began studying powerful viruses in 2006. In 2014, many of these viruses she studied, including not only coronavirus, but also Machupo, Yunnan, Rift Valley fever, Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever, and Hendra, all suddenly appeared in China as part of a massive hijacking. And it says you can read the full report about this at ZeroHedge.com.
And does that pretty much complete the important part of that one?
It does, yes.
Yes, then we had, this was just yesterday. Yesterday, and we're coming to you on the 30th, so this would have been January 29th. The World Health Organization, the WHO, you know, owls symbolize death. Coronavirus, whole world must take action, warns WHO. And the head of the World Health Organization Health Emergencies Program, Dr. Michael Ryan, said the whole world needs to be on alert. And I'm telling you, it has a picture of him in this article. This was from the BBC. He looks just like pictures of Pan. He really is a very interesting looking individual. I don't know, almost like Baphomet too. Don't you think, Lou?
I think you're right.
It's a creepy picture.
Yeah, kind of
so
that way.
He says the WHO would meet on, I guess today when you're hearing this, they're going to discuss whether the virus constitutes a global health emergency. And there's a little bit more there, what they're doing, that Britons on Wuhan flights will be quarantined, an island quarantine plan as foreigners leave China. And then we have one more article here, and this is again from Ethan Huff at Natural News. Eugenicist, and this is January 29th, eugenicist Bill Gates co-hosted a high-level pandemic exercise back in October, just in time for the patented coronavirus he helped fund to be unleashed. And, of course, this is Natural News' viewpoint. Not long before Chinese coronavirus started making global headlines, the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, in partnership with the World Economic Forum and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, held a high-level pandemic exercise called Event 201 that seems to have been a predictive blueprint for what's now transpiring with the coronavirus outbreak. On October 18, 2019, representatives from each of the aforementioned groups descended on New York City to discuss how they would respond to, quote, a severe pandemic, much like the one we're now being told is spreading across China and into the West. The exercise, quote, illustrated areas where public/private partnerships will be necessary during the response to a severe pandemic in order to diminish large-scale economic and societal consequences, an official announcement from Event 201 reads, quote, in recent years, the world has seen a growing number of epidemic events, amounting to approximately 200 events annually. The announcement goes on to explain, quote, these events are increasing, and they are disruptive, to health, economics, and society, economies, and society. According to the event's organizers, a pandemic like the one we could be seeing form right now before our very eyes requires, quote, cooperation among governments, industries, and, quote, key international institutions, the latter presumably referring to organizations like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And a big headline, is coronavirus yet another ploy to thin the herd and sell more vaccines? The timing of Event 201 is nothing short of suspicious. It's during, it's eclipsing President Trump's impeachment proceedings. I'll have to go over this a little bit quickly here, give you the gist of it, that we're seeing headlines about coronavirus popping up in major cities, will it just fizz out? But we don't know whether it will fizzle out, rather, or spread like wildfire. Mainstream reporting is admitting that coronavirus is constantly changing, like some kind of self-replicating bioweapon, which is all too convenient, considering that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation-funded PureBright, and that's spelled capital PIRBRIGHT Institute, owns a patent on coronavirus for vaccine creation purposes. We ought to repeat that. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation-funded PureBright Institute owns a patent on coronavirus for vaccine creation purposes. Was this whole outbreak engineered for the purpose of scaring the general public into accepting yet another government vaccine? Is it also about depopulating the planet as part of Bill Gates' admitted efforts to use vaccination and, quote, healthcare as a means of reducing the world's population by 10 to 15%? Time will tell what becomes of this latest public health scare. And again, this is Ethan Huff writing at Natural News. But one thing is for sure, Bill Gates and his eugenicist buddies are chomping at the bit to vaccinate the entire planet against coronavirus and any other disease they can conjure up as a deadly bioweapon. At the current time, the fatality rate associated with coronavirus infection is relatively low, around 2%. But that could very quickly change as the virus mutates and adapts to new environments, creating the horrific scenario predicted by Event 201. Experts agree that it is only a matter of time before one of these epidemics becomes global, a pandemic with potentially catastrophic consequences. The Event 201 description ominously predicts a severe pandemic, which becomes Event 201, would require reliable cooperation among several industries, national governments, and key international institutions. Again, we have the Rahm Emanuel. We never let a crisis go to waste. We stir up a problem so that we can enforce the solution. And we were not able tonight to get to the 75th anniversary of the freeing of the people at Auschwitz. And we have some important things to say on that next time, as well as give you the update on the coronavirus. There's an important book called Survivor's Club by Michael Bornstein, B-O-R-N-S-T-I-N. You can find it. We found it at Barnes & Noble in the children's section. It's certainly more powerful. Children really should not read it. But the cover is so striking. This survivor was 4 years old, and he did survive Auschwitz. It's just an amazing story, and he hardly ever told his family or anybody about this, why he had the tattoo on his arm. I think it was 1148, and there was a letter in front of it. But a few years back, he went online, and there he saw one of those odious Holocaust denial sites, and it had his picture there, proving that the Holocaust never happened. And he was shaken to the core. So the upshot of it became his daughter, Debbie. He began to really tell her more and more, and they researched in this powerful book, Survivor's Club by Michael Bornstein. I can't recommend it enough. It's not very expensive, $12.99. It's certainly a quality book. I'll be referring to it again more. If you would like to help us stay on the air, you can send cash or money orders, checks written only to WWCR, to Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Again, that's PO Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. We really want to warn you to prepare. Get lots of food in your home and have lots of prayer to God to be merciful to us this time. Thank you for listening. Good night.